Dr. Beth Murphy, and I'm a retired firefighter and a clinical psychologist in private practice. If you've listened to my show before, then you may be missing my husband, John Murphy. He runs my dashboard frequently, and I think the shows go a lot smoother when he's in charge of the dashboard. I'm not sure why. Maybe it's the multitasking thing that I struggle with. So, you know, thinking about what it is I'm going to be talking about and getting my thoughts organized and then having to deal with the dashboard. And not like it's all that complicated, but it's like one more thing. When you're stressed, one more thing can be enough to derail you. So anyway. He's not here. He's working his day job. Many of you may have listened to him as well, and he's one of the attorneys with Brad Pinsky and Kurt Verone and Chick Comstock, the firehouse lawyers. So they have a pretty good show, and they usually are talking about current events and winging it. So I think attorneys are perfect for that. So he's off doing his other job. So he works as a physician assistant. So I'm on my own. I think one of the first things I was trying to figure out is how I could mute myself so I could sniff. Because I have a cold or I have allergies, and I'm not quite sure which. So I apologize if I sniff in your ears. So for my shows, I generally try to pay attention to, you know, what's going on, like what might be going on in the world that firefighters might be dealing with, or what kinds of things, what kind of problems and issues get brought to my attention in my practice, or sometimes it's even something that's personal to me. So I might have some struggle or frustration and have to figure it out. And I think, oh, this is something maybe people would like help with. So tonight for me, when you hear this, it could be the morning. But tonight, I was thinking about talking about a topic that comes up frequently and kind of address some of the common issues or concerns that come up. And I work, I have a private practice, and I do see some people that are actually not first responders, but most of my clients are first responders. So I hear from a lot of firefighters and police, and so it's amazing how similar the comments are. And so that's kind of where my focus will be tonight. So I was asked to come speak to a recruit academy about mental health. And I was thinking, well, gosh, you know, first off, like, how much time do I get? And what do I really want to talk about? Like, what's really important? And so I'm going to talk about the topic that I thought of. And yes, it is about mental health. And it's about being a bit more proactive and preventative. So it's like, well, how can we be proactive and preventative? What is the strategy there? So I thought, well, let's start from the end. So I don't know anybody that's listening here, you know, think about when you got into the fire service. You know, like maybe you're just a couple years in and you're young, you know, like maybe you're 20 and you've got 2 years in. Maybe you're, you know, 26 and went to college and then 2 years in, or, you know, wherever it was. Or maybe you're listening and you got hired right out of high school and you are looking at maybe pushing 30 years and you're thinking about retirement. So I thought, well, then let's start with retirement. I think that one of the ways that we can help people going into the fire service is not so much about telling them, look, this is what you're going to screw you up. It's going to be about thinking someday you're going to want to retire. And how do you want that to be? You know, what do you want it to look like? And that's something that most 20-year-olds don't think of. Most 30-year-olds don't think of. There are exceptions to this, obviously. I know of some. I've worked with some where they came in and they were young and they were pretty dialed in. And they're like, oh, I'm going to go into the fire service. It's got a pension and I'm going to, you know, max that out and I'm going to, you know, work towards retirement and, you know, make sure that I'm maximizing my savings and my investments. And I mean, they're like dialed in, but that's so, we very rarely start something thinking about the end result. And I think that everybody comes in and they're like, yes, I want to do this job and I want to do it for a long time. So that kind of moves us towards the end, but they don't think about retirement. And we get to retire earlier. And I'm not sure if this is true for the across the country, but is it? It's a left thing, right? So I guess it would be across the country. So firefighters can retire at age 53 after 20 years. So that's pretty young. I mean, you could have a whole nother life after that. And some people do, and some people don't, because they work like they're going to live forever and be problem free. So this is what I was thinking. So let's start at the end. So I think that, like, if you're listening to this, then I want you to just take a moment and you can close your eyes if you want. And it doesn't matter how long you've been in the department. I want you to think about, like, what you're going to look like when you retire, when you're done with the job. Some of you may not have a very pretty picture, so to speak, because maybe you have had a lot of issues. You've had injuries. You carry a lot of your calls. Maybe you've been diagnosed and you know that you're struggling with PTSD or depression, or I guess that could be an and or depression or and or anxiety. Maybe you've had lots of surgeries because of the injuries. I mean, you know, wherever you are, I mean, that might color your image of yourself, but it's like, what is retirement going to look like? What is your plan? So some people really struggle with retirement, and this is why I want people to start up their career thinking about their retirement, because one is, how can you do the job and know that you're going to be healthy, and being healthy in retirement is multifaceted. So it's not just like physical health. It's not just mental health. I mean, so it's like being physically healthy, being mentally healthy, being fiscally healthy, being healthy in your relationships and supports. So, you know, your partner, children, friends, you know, your network. And what else do you do besides the fire service? Like what hobbies do you have? What kinds of activities do you have when you're not at work? So it's this, and spiritual. So that would be the other piece, is like, what's your spiritual life like? Whether that's something where you are going to church or you're getting out into nature and hugging trees. So those are things to consider. And these are all things that without intention and some thought, those are things that can be deeply impacted by the fire service, by the job, by the accumulation of stressors, both on and off the job. So you can kind of plan for stuff if you have a vision of what you want to do when you're done with your career. Now, I say this, and I'm going to admit it freely, is that that's not a thought that I had. I got hired in the fire department when I was 33, and I was a single mom of three girls. And I went into the fire service because I was looking for something that was physically active and was going to help me stay in shape. Because I was like at the height of my fitness, and I lifted weights, and I was incredibly strong. And I mean, honestly, I worked out all the time, but I didn't have to work hard. You know, it was like, it was part of who I was, and I was strong and really fit. And I wanted something that was going to encourage, like help me stay fit, but encourage me to stay fit. And then also I wanted to make some money. And I realized that the like wages differ among fire departments in Washington State. I was, you know, our fire department paid pretty well. And I was fortunate to work for a department that paid pretty well. And then of course, like being part of the WASP pension system, I mean, I never ever considered like, oh, I want a pension, but I can tell you, I am really, really thankful that I have it. So when I went in, you know, my reasoning for becoming a firefighter was I wanted a good job. I wanted to have something that was challenging. I wanted to make some decent money so I could support my children. I wanted more waking time with my children, and the fire service really helped with that. And I wanted to help people. Now, I've sat on some panels for the hiring process for the fire service, and it always makes me laugh because, you know, when people ask, why do you want to be a firefighter? It's kind of like, well, do I give you the honest answer or do I give you the answer I think you want to hear? And most people will default to, well, I want to help people. And it's like, yes, that can be true. But like I was very forthcoming about, well, I wanted something that had a schedule that would allow me to spend more time with my girls and would pay me money because I needed to support them. And I wanted to help people. And here I am as a psychologist, still helping people. I really wanted to get away from customer service before. And that makes me laugh too, because I found that the fire service is the ultimate customer service job. So when I thought I was getting away from customer service, it was like, oh no, I was jumping into it. So that's a little aside, but it's important to know why you're doing the job. That's one part of it. The other part of it is, like I said, is like, well, how long do you think you're going to be doing it? And what do you want to do when you're done? And most people retire within like 30 years. And I probably should have pulled some statistics there, so I can't give you the exact numbers, but I know a few guys that actually did 40. I think from what I've observed, that would be pretty rare. So it's something that you're going to retire. You know, you work any other job, you know, retirement age is like 65, but there's a benefit to not like pulling your Social Security till like 70. So it's like, well, what are you going to do for 5 years? So chances are, you know, in the public sector, so non-firefighter job, you would be out there working some job until conceivably you were 70. And I honestly cannot imagine doing, at least as a firefighter, till I was 70. So there may be chiefs out there that are older. So as you're working your way up, you're increasing your, obviously, your pension and what you would be paid out once you retire. And then, you know, it gets a little easier on your body. But it doesn't necessarily get easier on you mentally. So there's still a lot to carry mentally. And there's a lot of different pressures too. So with that said, younger people are not really thinking about retirement. They're not really thinking about the end. They think that they're invincible. And I say that maybe some people will be insulted, but that's kind of the general thought, is like, you might have this logical thought about, well, yeah, of course I'm going to die someday. Everybody dies someday. But the way you feel in your body and feel emotionally and in what you can accomplish, it's like there's a tendency to feel like you can do anything and you can do it forever. And I know that I felt that too, even when I first got into fire service at 33, you know, being super fit and active, I felt like this is the job or this is the career. And it was the first time I felt like I had a career. So I wasn't really planning so much for the future. And so this is something that I really think that we need to address, is not that you go into the academy and somebody comes in and says, you will see a lot of bad stuff and you will develop PTSD. And I have heard, I've heard firefighters and mental health professionals and chiefs say, this is what we need to say to people when they come in to the fire service and during the academy, is we need to tell them they're going to be messed up when they get out. And I'm like, that's not helpful. And tell you why it's not helpful. It's not helpful because words matter. And the stories we tell ourselves, it matters. And this is something that, like when you're working, when you're trained to work with trauma and traumatic stress, there are several therapy modalities that are very beneficial in working with traumatic stress. And part of them, part of all of them, what they all have in common is that it tells the story in some way. So it's like telling the story and retelling the story. and pulling in more detail and understanding, you know, like any changes in how you're telling the story. But basically it's like you need to tell the story. And then you need to variance and feel the activation in some way around the story. And so in a couple different therapy modalities, you're telling the story and retelling the story and you're highly activated, but over the course of telling the story, you are deactivated. And so you desensitize to it. EMDR creates, it starts out by like deactivating. So it creates a greater calm in the beginning. So you're not as activated, but you're still telling the story. And it's a little bit different. It may be more of like the mental story than the out loud story. But then the next step after that is that when you've told your story and you're no longer activated, then you have to tell yourself a new story. So it's not enough to just deactivate the reactivity that is attached to the story. You have to tell a new story. And so you can create that and you don't lie to yourself. You don't make stuff up. But you tell the story in a different way. The basic facts will be the same. So it doesn't change that. So it might be that your story is about going on a call and having a couple, you know, a car accident. So let's say a bad MVA and maybe a child was involved. And I say it because I know that that's when it gets everybody. But it's like how bad that feels to you is really going to depend on how that associates with your own story. And then also how you feel about your role in it or how you handled yourself or how you handled yourself after. I mean, so there's a lot of ways that incident can get tied into other parts of your life and then get processed in your brain in a way that it sticks. And then how it sticks and how bad it feels, it depends on all your previous experiences and what you do with that and your ability to make meaning out of that and to face whatever emotion might go along with going on these calls or how it connects to your personal life and so forth. So it's like every experience you've had in your life kind of starts to lay the groundwork for how you're going to respond. And if you're getting the message, even if later in life, that being a firefighter is going to mess you up, then that is going to become part of your narrative. And so it doesn't have to be. And it's important to know that that's not the case. So this stuff is, you know, it's supported in, there's a lot of theory out there and there's been a lot of research in these areas. And, you know, so one area is the research on mindset. And mindset has a lot to do with what you believe about something and the meaning you make of things. And I think the simplest thing I can give as an example, which was kind of the first time that I had a wow moment around all this, was listening to a TED Talk, and it's an older TED Talk, and there obviously has been a lot of research since then, but Gonigal, and it was Making Stress Your Friend. And so part of her research was based in asking people will stress make you sick, or will stress make you stronger, essentially? And her study showed that if people thought that stress was going to make them sick, then it made them sick, and that the people in her study, there was a large percentage of them that actually passed away, like, over the next 5 years. And then the people who said, well, it makes you stronger, continued on. So, you know, that belief around it. And it's not that stress isn't hard. So we're inundated with stressful things our whole life. And in many ways, I mean, it's like pretty much everything is a stress. So our survival mechanism, the way our body is designed, is that we respond to stress. So, you know, the fight flight response is, that's what we call it, but it really is our alerting or alarm system and our calm system. So that's our autonomic system. So when we get stimulated by something, and it could be a call, it could be the tones going off for, you know, a call. I mean, it's like, so it could be a call, like whatever it is you're doing on that call, it could just be simply the tones going off. Good stress, basically, like you're buying a house, you get married, you have a child. It could be something like you're getting a bill and it's higher than you expected. I mean, so it's like pretty much everything creates some physiological response in us, anything, any stimulus. And so our body is reacting the way it's supposed to. And it does it even with the things that people say is horrific and we should be bothered by it, which that reminds me of like one of the other areas, which was actually a little bit earlier than it was before the TED Talk with Kelly McGonigal, but it was John Breyer. At a conference, and I found out like he's a Buddhist psychologist, and so he's got a different way of like looking at people's process and their struggles. And so the concepts that are really big there are like acceptance, compassion, forgiveness, and non-judgment. And I don't know about you, but non-judgment can be a really hard thing. But these are things that I hear a lot in my practice with firefighters. So there tends to be a tremendous amount of compassion for other people, a willingness to forego judgment of other people, to accept other people, their flaws, their thoughts. And you know, maybe a quicker willingness to forgive other people. But when it comes to applying it to themselves, that is a completely different story. And so this is something that can feed into these narratives and can shape that mindset. Kind of the point of like John Breyer is like, so he's one of the leading experts on trauma. He's the author of the Trauma Symptom Inventory, which some of you may be familiar with because maybe someone, you know, maybe a psychologist or a therapist gave it to you as an assessment. I know it's one that I use often. And what he said was this idea, and again, it has to do with language and story, but he was talking about, he did a lot of work with, I'm not quite sure what the correct term is. I want to say convicts, but I don't think that's the right term. Prisoners. I think there's a different term for them. Inmates. Inmates in prison. Inmates. And he would interact with like some of the worst of the worst, And somebody, you know, basically asked him, like, how can he do that and still, like, have compassion and non-judgment and so forth. And so he talked about, you know, his process. And the thing that really stuck with me was he was talking about, like, you know, some of the things that, like these inmates did that landed them in prison, and he used the term horrible and horrific. And he said that, and this is like kind of like was an aside, this was not in defense in any way, shape or form of these inmates and what they did, but like in a general sense, talking about this idea of what is horrible and what is horrific. And he said that, that what is defined as horrible or what's horrible, what's horrific, and that you should be horrified is defined by society. And that I think that feeds in also to this idea of we shouldn't be telling our young firefighters that they're going to be damaged by the job. Because it's true that some people come into the fire service and they have a hard time dealing with things, and then they leave the fire service not healthy. And I know firefighters that were basically pushed out because they were impacted by all the stressors in their life on and off the job, and they just weren't able to face it and deal with it in a way that allowed them to continue and do the job in a way that was good for everybody around them. And then they started to feel unsupported, which makes things worse. But anyway, the fact is that, you know, what is horrible and horrifying for one person may not be true for the other person. And so, I don't know why that resonated with me, but it did. And so that's something that I practice in my practice is this idea that what I think they mean may not be what they mean. So if somebody says that, like if somebody said that they were on this really horrible call, I'm not going to judge whether that was horrible or not. What's important is like what's their story around it. I can tell you that I've heard stories that I honestly was glad that I didn't go on. People in the fire service have experienced a lot of calls that I've never seen, that I've not experienced. And I can hear that, and I can, you know, I know what it feels like in me, but I don't know what that feels like in them. And so I'm not going to tell them how they should feel. And I'm not going to let whatever I feel come across as a judgment towards like what they should feel. And so and this is really important because one of the things that is often done with in CISM is like the training that you're given in the mental model. And this is like, you know, how it's administered makes a big difference, but you know, like how it was taught to me, basically there's one part where you tell people like what they might experience. It's like, well, you may feel this, 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 and this. And so I had people coming back to me. So I was peer support when I was in the fire service. So before I was a psychologist. And later, like when I was in school, but not yet a psychologist, and most definitely after I was a psychologist, you know, there would be these times where people would come and they would question, like, is there something wrong with me? Because feel what they're telling me I'm going to feel. And so people question, like, is there something wrong? Because they're not feeling these things they're supposed to feel because they were told you're going to experience this. So that's, you know, so that's one part of that, like why you don't want to say, well, you're going to feel this and this, and you don't want to make assumptions about what a person's going to feel because everybody's experience is different. And so that's going to, they're going to interpret their situation different. So having that difference in meaning, which again is, this is all about like language and what we say to ourselves and the stories we tell. And there is another point to this, and I'm hoping it will come back because I went off on a little bit of a tangent. So hoping it'll come back. So in telling people in the fire service, like the young people, you know, I'm not going to tell them how they should feel or what they're going to feel. I can tell them that they're going to experience stressful situations. Ah, my point came back. Stress. Everybody experiences a stress reaction. It doesn't matter what it is. So that was kind of the point. The other point of all this is that what we tell ourselves, how we define something, that can actually influence how big our reaction is and how quickly we get over it. There's been a lot of research around that too. So it's not really helpful. It's kind of like if you tell people in the academy, you're going to experience a lot of stressful things and you could experience this symptom, that symptom, you know, and, you know, list off all these symptoms, then that is like priming the pump. And the fact is that they may not feel those things. They may not experience those things. They will experience a physiological stress response. They will experience an alarm in their body. So the autonomic system will be stimulated and their sympathetic nervous system is going to kick in and it's going to do what it's supposed to do. And it basically is going to get them ready. It gets you ready to do something. And then at some point, the sympathetic nervous system is going to kick in and you're going to come back down to normal. Now, this can happen. It happens naturally. I mean, you can't actually control some of it, but you don't control all of it. But you can modulate your stress response. At least the physiological aspect of it by what you tell yourself. And so that could be like being prepared. So you can prepare yourself. So like knowing some of the things you could see and knowing that you are receiving the training that you need in order to respond so that you can be there to help this situation and not you're not responsible for the situation. And that's another big thing that I've had come up a lot is that firefighters have a tendency to have this tremendous sense of responsibility. And so they feel like if they don't help the situation that somehow they're responsible for the bad outcome. And, or maybe they go to the same call over and over and over again, and maybe the last time they go, there's a bad outcome. And so then that may contribute to this, there's that responsibility, but then there's also this sense of failure because you didn't help them. but you know, what that help is supposed to be might be very different. And so being able to understand that everybody has a stress reaction and it's normal. There's no way to not have one. It's part of our innate mechanism, our innate survival mechanism. excuse me. there also is a tendency towards negative appraisals. That's also part of our survival mechanism. So that of the reason why when people are overstressed, there's a tendency to have this propagation of negative thoughts. And that comes out of this kind of natural, innate mechanism of going that direction. And the fact is that that's not always reality. But if that's what you're constantly saying to yourself, then that's going to start to wire your brain in that way. So understanding some of this stuff, knowing that what we say affects us and stays with us, knowing that we're going to have a stress reaction and it's going to be unique to you. And then you get a choice over how that impacts you. So making meaning out of it. So if you have some call or a personal interaction or something that is stressful and you have that stress reaction, then you acknowledge that, you recognize that, pay attention to it, and then pay attention to what you think and feel in that moment. And if what you're thinking is not particularly helpful and overly negative, then you can reframe that. And so it's not like you have to think positive thoughts because you can still be realistic. But the idea is then what you feel emotionally, you acknowledge. And if you feel bad emotionally, then what you do with that is kind of the other piece of this is stuffing it down, which is something I hear a lot. So pretty much every firefighter I work with, they don't feel like it's okay to be emotional or to express emotion. It's kind of like it's like being emotional and weakness go hand in hand. But our emotions are pieces of information. And sometimes our emotions, what we label for our emotions, are actually not accurate, and it's based on our, you know, how we were raised and how, like when we had physiological responses to various things, and those physiological reactions started to label those, and those, you know, become emotions, and sometimes they get mislabeled. So maybe, you know, that's not even really accurate, like what you think the emotion is, but being able to face it and sit with it is really powerful, and it prevents it from blowing up. And I hear that a lot. Most of the firefighters, in fact, I could say like pretty much everyone says some version of that, that they just kind of stuff things down and then they go home and then they yell at their kid or they blow up on their wife or, you know, maybe it's not even that they make it home, but they're at work and they yell at a patient. It can go from something pretty benign to something, you know, more severe where like maybe they're getting into fist fights. And a lot of that goes along with this idea of stuffing emotions down. And it's because they never learned how to sit with the emotions and express the emotions. And, And I think being able to recognize it and label that emotion is important, but that's not really the necessary part. It's necessary to acknowledge it and sit with it. I mean, if it feels bad, like when we have so-called positive emotions, we don't have to go through all this. It's the ones that make us feel uncomfortable. So fear and anxiety and sadness and then anger. I mean, and anger is kind of one that covers up other emotions. So it often covers up fear and sadness. It's a protective one. Anger often is protective. It's a way of putting up armor and keeping people away from you, so you won't be vulnerable anymore. You can't be hurt anymore. But anyway, it's like, so I hear that a lot in practice. And so in my practice, and it's, stuffing things down and then blowing up. So it's like you're going to experience stress in your life. And I've had this conversation lately. It's like COVID is still going on. And I know for firefighters, at least around here, is that there's, you know, changes in policies. There's changes in recommendations. There's a lot of like shifting, changing things. So there's the stability is not really there. And so trying to deal with new and evolving situations when you're operating from an unstable base obviously creates a lot of stress. That means that people will work hard to like regain some control. And so then they might become a bit more rigid in their thinking and then start to like narrow their vision, you know, like almost get tunnel vision on, okay, well, here's the problem and this is how I'm going to work it. But they lose their flexibility and creativity to problem solve. And then they're more likely to make assumptions that are inaccurate or to take on greater responsibility than they should. And then this is all going to cause them to stuff it all down, because who wants to air out what they think may have been a mistake? Stuff it down, avoid it. That's always a good solution. And I say that in the most sarcastic way I can. So being able to sit with the emotion and express it, and it doesn't have to be a big deal. There's no big secret, convoluted, involved process for that. Wow. I feel something in my stomach, like a flip-flop in my stomach. It feels like somebody's pushing on my chest, and not in like a heart attack pushing on my chest way. I feel like my cheeks are flushed, but my fingers are cold or whatever. So it's like tuning into those physiological things first. And then putting the emotion with it. Well, it's like, man, you know, it's like I have these physiological issues when I'm really anxious or I'm really scared or I'm really whatever it is. And then when you identify it and you go, yeah, I think I'm anxious. Yeah, that's it. Or maybe it's fear. It's like, oh, I think I'm afraid. Then you can tell yourself after that, if you're on your way to a call or you're dealing with something at home, then you can tell yourself, okay, yeah, I'm feeling some fear and anxiety. And okay, that's okay. I can handle this. And as soon as you say, I can handle this, then that power, that physiological response and that emotion that you named had on you weakens a little bit. And then you didn't stuff it down. You sat with it. You named it. It's like you looked it in the eye and you said, I see you. And when you do that, then it loses its power. And then you could take it further if you wanted. So if it's something that just kind of stays present and lingers, then there's a process in narrative therapy where you can interview it. And this is like a language-based, story-based type therapy. And it is really powerful. And so in the interview process of an emotion, you are externalizing it. So it's an emotion that you struggle with. It's outside of you. It's not you. It doesn't define you. So it's something you struggle with, and you sit it across from you, and then you pay attention to what image might come up when this emotion sits across from you. So a lot of people will see some like person type thing. Sometimes it's nebulous. You know, like maybe it's a fog, but most of the time it's a person. Sometimes with a lot of features, sometimes with no features. It's kind of like an outline of a person. And then you ask questions like, okay, what do you want from me? I mean, that would be great to get an answer to that. You know, who do you like to hang out with? Which is, you know, basically it continuing that process of personifying other emotions. So emotions very rarely are a single emotion. They don't show up as the only emotion. There's usually a bunch of emotion that could be attached. So it's like, well, who do you hang out with? And so maybe anxiety is pretty tight with fear. And then maybe they're kind of, they're friends with procrastination or avoidance. And then you could say, well, like who makes, you know, who or what makes you stronger? And so maybe there are other emotions that make it stronger. So when fear and anger are present, then it gets really powerful and even more scary. Maybe it's a situation where there are certain situations that come up for you that would, you know, make that emotion stronger. And then you would ask, you know, the opposite, like, well, what makes you weaker and who do you hate to have come along? And I can tell you that any of the emotions that we tend to label as negative really hate it when happiness comes along or joy. And they absolutely hate contentment. So you go through this process and you start to understand some things. You can also ask like, well, where did you come from? Like, how did you develop? How did this feeling I have around you being here? Like, where did that come from? And so start just trying to understand it. So it serves a purpose in helping you sit with the discomfort of that experiencing that negative. And it's like, quote, end quote, negative, quote, unquote, I think that's the phrase, right? It's a process of naming it, feeling it, and being able to sit with that discomfort, which can help desensitize the physiological response attached to that emotion and whatever might be going on, which kind of goes back to, you know, what I mentioned in the beginning of all this around, you know, the different types of therapies and dealing with trauma. And so telling the story and feeling the feeling is is the way to deal with that, which they don't teach you that in the fire service. They teach you how to overcome your fear, and that's important. And it's important to acknowledge that too. So what they teach you about doing the job and what you might feel or not feel is important, because that helps with your mindset, and that can help empower you and help you process things so that you can have a long, healthy career. So that interview process, again, is about like understanding what it is that you're experiencing and sitting with it so you don't explode, because that's what happens when you stuff down emotions. And that happens a lot in the fire service, because the fire service does not tell you it's okay to be emotional. When you're doing your job, of course you don't want to be emotional. But when you shut down, if you don't allow yourself to open up again and acknowledge that you had these feelings or had this response, then that's where the stuffing down starts. So it can be a purposeful stuffing down, or it could be, less of a conscious desire to stuff something down, but more of a, it's not okay to hear. It's not okay to have these emotions here. So, and that's a lot that I hear as well. So telling that story, feeling those feelings, both like emotionally and physiologically, become really important. And then not assuming and trying to keep judgment out of it. So, you know, it's like, oh, well, if you feel sad, then you're weak. So this is like kind of the narrative that a lot of boys will grow up with. It's not okay to be sad. It's not okay to cry. But you can be angry. It's okay to be angry. And, you know, maybe those aren't said in words, but in action, that tends to get supported. And then girls, you know, they often get socialized in a slightly different way, which this is a generalization, but that's, you know, kind of the tendency towards things, and there can be some exceptions, but that message gets sent, it gets given in a lot of different formats. So not just like from your parents and your upbringing, but, you know, from like social media, from the media, from movies and TV, and what's on social media, what's in the paper, what's in the magazines, and so forth. So there's a lot of information coming in. And so it's important that you take that in and you make some decisions about it. So you be deliberate about that. And so you're like, well, what does that have to do with retirement? Like, I started this all out saying, well, let's, when we're talking to people in the academy, let's the end. And so that's basically deciding at the beginning of your career, how do you want to end your career? What do you want for your life? What do you want retirement to look like? Where is meaning and purpose going to come from? And how are you going to do this in a healthy way? And so telling people that they're going to experience horrible things and that it's going to damage them, that they're going to get PTSD, is not the way to start the career out. So those words, because words matter and stories matter, that matters. And so that's not how we want to start our career out. And you want to start it by thinking about the end and how you want life. And I know that this personally is not something that I did. I went in, as I told you, for all the reasons I did. I didn't think about retirement. I didn't think about, you know, what it was going to be like when my career was over. I can tell you that I didn't make it 20 years. I got hurt again. You know, I had like 5 surgeries, knees and shoulders and a neck injury. So I worked hard and I put everything into it and I broke my body. So and there's nobody that could have told me that when I was younger, that if you keep like working hard and playing hard like this, you're going to pay for it. Okay, actually my mom told me and I didn't believe her. But, you know, I didn't, you know, nobody told me how to pace myself. Nobody talked to me about, you know, you should work this job as if you're getting close to retiring, which means don't be a slacker, but, you know, like be engaged, be mindful, be aware, pace yourself. Pay attention to the stories you tell yourself, acknowledge what you're feeling, you know, take care of yourself. And I think that everybody goes into the fire service probably the healthiest they've ever been. And many people, far too many people, have their, you know, experience their health decline, you know, the mental health, the physical health, the, you know, probably the physical health is fine unless you're one of those people that deals with your stress by buying. So then you buy all the toys and then you work a second job so that you could pay for all those the toys and then you never have any time to use them. So it's important to have a plan in place. You know, don't spend all your money on toys. Don't put yourself in a position where you have to work all the time to maintain what you have. You know, pace yourself. Ask yourself the questions. Face what you're experiencing. Pay attention to your narrative. Pay attention to what your body is telling you. Yes, know that you're going to see some really hard, difficult things. And these things may be things that you will remember for the rest of your life, but they don't have to haunt you. And I think that that's important. And you don't have to get PTSD. You don't have to struggle with mental health. I mean, everybody does to some extent. I'm sure they do. But that doesn't have to be your narrative, you know. It's like pay attention, and start to shift things when you notice changes, and it's okay to change. We have several milestones that we hit throughout our life, you know, like everybody like kind of jokes about like men and their midlife crisis. Well, women have that too. And it actually is more than just a midlife crisis. There actually are like several. And during those times, we are kind of, we feel driven to make some changes or to do something. And it's just a matter of paying attention to what's going on around you and what is going on in your life and what is this need? Like, what is the shift? I mean, so kind of the easy ones are, you know, like the drive to want to partner up, the drive to have children and be parents, the drive to service, maybe to give back, the sense of loss when our kids grow up and don't need us anymore. Now they go off to college or whatever, and I got news for you: they need you forever. I just got back from Hawaii. I went there to help my daughter out and my grandsons, and she just had her fourth child. She's got 3 little boys and now a little girl. And I went there to help out, to just kind of make things a little bit easier and give her the opportunity to enjoy her little baby and to bond and, you know, and to be there. So, and I actually delivered the baby, which was pretty exciting. So my whole career, I never delivered a baby, but I delivered my granddaughter. So that was fun. Anyway, but we go through these changes and we don't like change, but again, it's something that it depends on what you tell yourself about that change. So change helps you grow. Stress can help you grow. Everybody has a stress reaction, and how you view stress, how you view your ability to tolerate stressful things, how you manage that stress reaction. I mean, these are all things that make a difference. So if you feel that stress makes you stronger, if you are able to sit with the uncomfortableness that comes along with the emotions that we label as negative, and you can ask questions of those emotions, that will go a long way towards helping you be in a healthier mental place. And being in a healthier mental place can help make it easier to be in a healthier physical place, because you're more willing to like stay active and stay motivated to, you know, to eat right, to exercise, to engage in activities. And these are all things that are important. And these are all things that I have heard my clients stop. So they stop doing all the things that they did before that made them happy and healthy. And it's okay to change those things because we do. And it would be normal to change like some of our activities. But too often those activities, any activities, are stopped because as the stress reaction goes unmitigated and the emotions get stuffed down and things pile up, then we lose energy and motivation to do the things that help us feel better and feel good. So the goal is get hired, go into the fire service. It's an amazing job. There are amazing opportunities. It can be incredibly exciting. It can be stressful. It can be downright boring. But it's amazing nonetheless. And you want to think about how you want to retire. And I'm pretty sure that all of you are saying, well, I want to retire healthy. I want to retire and travel. I want to retire and play golf. I want to retire and do another job. Said pretty much no one, but that happens a lot. So then what do you want to do? Know that you're going to experience a lot of stress, and you're going to have a lot of stress reactions, because that is normal. And the stress is not always going to come from your job. It could be from the calls. It could be from the coworkers. It can be from administration. It could be from your family of origin. It can be from your family, your partner, your children. It can be the things that you are excited about and you look forward to. It could be about the things that you never wanted to experience, but you did. So you're always going to have that, and you're always going to respond. There's always going to be a reaction. What's important is, what do you do with that? How do you make meaning out of that? How good are you at facing those uncomfortable feelings that come along? So that's what's going to make a difference between retiring healthy or retiring broken. And, you know, there is great strength in being able to face things that you are afraid is going to hurt you. So the idea that facing your emotions or struggling with stress or, a mental health issue, having that be a sign of weakness, I think is so far from the truth. The people I know that face their whatever emotion comes along or face, a mental health issue. Those are the strongest people I know because they're facing something that people don't want to, that they're more willing to stuff it down than to face it. And when you face it, it goes away. It loses its power. So be brave, be courageous, and face whatever comes your way and trust that you can be okay. If not in the short term, at least in the long term. Because sometimes things do take time to process and to heal. Often it is short, but depending on what all is going on, it can take time. And maybe you have to undo some of the narrative, some of the story that you've been told or you've told yourself. So undo that and write your own story. So hopefully that helped. I kind of feel like this was a bit rambly, but I've been talking a lot about stuff like this with my clients, and so it was on my mind, and so you were part of my processing. So I'm hoping that you got something useful out of it. So take care of yourself and put yourself first and don't stuff things down, and you will have a good chance at retiring into whatever it is that you want to retire into. So I think on that note, I'm going to end. Thank you very much for listening. If you listened and you get to this point and you want to contact me with a question or there's a topic, there's something you want to hear me talk about, if you want John to come back on the show, he's pretty good at keeping me on task, just let me know. You can contact me at my email, blmurphy63@mac.com. So it's B as in Beth, L as in Lynn, Murphy as in Murphy, and 63@mac, M-A-C, like MacBook, mac.com, blmurphy63@mac.com. So any questions, concerns, comments, anything you want to hear about in the future, please contact me and go forth and have a great career and look forward to a healthy retirement. Take care and have a good night.